Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
Policies of Exclusion, Poverty, and Health, Stories from the Front, is a book published by women living in the Cowichan Valley. The project is unique. It contains stories of women of all ages, races, and situations who live in poverty. All the stories are told in the first person and reveal the true cost of living below the poverty line. The book came out of a project initiated by a small group called WISE, Wellness Through Inclusion, Socially and Economically. After writing her own story as a woman isolated by poverty, a friend encouraged Crystal Ocean to apply for a grant. She then set out to gather the stories of other women who are also living with poverty. Crystal joins us to tell us about the project and about the book. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning, Lorraine.
Now, I understand the gathering of the book, the stories began as a project before it was a book, only later evolved into book form. When you set out to bring those stories together, what in your mind was the purpose of that project?
I was fed up to my eyeballs with statistics. And the other women, too, we have been researched to death. And it seems to me that so much money and funding has been going to academic research and no action is ever taken. I wanted it to be stories because I wanted the women's own voices to be the ones heard. I wanted no researchers to stand between the women and the reader. I wanted to reach the reader's heart.
How would you describe the range of women who volunteered to participate in the project?
We range from our 20s to 60s. We come from a variety of socioeconomic backgrounds and cultures. Some of us are Native. Others are immigrant. Some are on welfare or disability benefits. Others are retired, students, self-employed, or working one or more part-time jobs. We are single, married, and all the things in between. And where our lives meet is that we all subsist below the poverty line, most of us many thousands of dollars below it.
So we're not talking about a stereotypical woman here?
No, we're all over the place.
Now, for the most part, the stories weren't written by the women themselves, but they are the voices of those women. So tell me how the stories were crafted. And I understand that a couple were actually written by the women, but others took a different form where mainly you acted as the storyteller.
Mm-hmm. Most of the stories, I did 15 stories by interview, and I used the word interview loosely. And these interviews were done through one-on-one meetings with me over three or four sessions. And also it's important to point out that the women were not introduced to each other until after all their stories had been collected.
So you would go to the women's homes then? And
typically we met in a park setting,
mm-hmm.
which was really nice because this was occurring over last summer. So we would meet in a local park where we could both reach it because everything has primarily had to be done on foot. Almost none of us have cars. So we would do that, and then we would just sit. I would bring a beverage or something for them, or a little snack. I'd try and bring fruit or raw veggies because we so seldom get to eat such good stuff.
Mm.
And then I had also developed a question set to guide me, but I seldom needed to ask more than two or three questions. I saw my job as primarily to listen and be supportive, and all the questions were open-ended, and the women were in control of the process throughout.
And then, how were the stories shaped from those interviews, conversations that you had?
Well, it wound up that the taped transcripts of our sessions together. Most were 10,000 or more words, and I typed all that up. It would have been lovely to have had software. There's something called Dragon Naturally Speaking or something. I would love to have had that instead of having to type, because I had to keep taking my hands off the keyboard and rewind the little tape machine and It was awful. It took so long.
That sounds grueling.
So anyway, from those 10,000 or more word transcripts, I would condense them to 2,500 words. Most of the stories are only 2,500 words long.
From a material perspective, what did the women who tell these stories talk about going without as women living quite a ways below the poverty line?
When you're in extreme poverty, it's all about not having, not having any or enough nutritious food, not having the money to pay for bus fare, certainly not having a car, or having a car but not having the money to pay for the insurance. You know, a couple of women do have cars. They're in a dreadful state needing repair, or they don't have the money to put the gas in them or pay for the insurance. It's about not having adequate clothing. It's about arriving at, for instance, trying to do this project, right, arriving at a politician's office or a potential funder's office wet and bedraggled because we don't have the appropriate rain gear. It was a mess that a couple of weeks ago with the snowstorm.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
What do the women's stories tell about the effect of this real deprivation in their lives? What's the effect on women emotionally?
The first and foremost effect was on their emotional well-being. It's alarming to state that more than half of us are suicidal. I am myself, I had not expected to find so much company. I would have been delighted not to have found that. And that was really sad. And before the Phase 1 report came out, which is also in the book, I felt like I was sitting on a bomb with everything that had come out in the stories.
Why did you choose storytelling as the medium for sharing these stories, for women talking about their lives in poverty?
Again, because it was about time people heard from us with no screen in between. And because we tended to start, almost all the stories tended to start in childhood, so you could trace how the poverty happened and why. And you could also begin to understand in reading the stories why it persists. And also just for the reader to understand, but you won't find a stereotype in our story. She's not there.
At the same time, as you say, there isn't a stereotype, and certainly, and the stories would be very, very different, unique to each woman. Were there threads that you found that emerged in different stories that emerged as a result of women living in poverty or that led women to poverty?
The number one predictor we found, long-term predictor, for our getting into our present state was, and this was another shocker, one or more events, more often several events that caused us trauma in childhood. These events would be childhood abuse, sexual, physical, emotional, the death of a family member, the suicide of a parent, these sorts of things, family breakup. It wasn't that any of these, like certainly with the family breakup or natural death of a parent, I mean, those are traumatic enough, but it was how the adults in our lives dealt with those situations that tended to exacerbate an already bad situation and often led us into situations of abuse.
So at the same time that you're saying that, I take it that you wouldn't say that this would be something that would inevitably happen to women, that there would be solutions that wouldn't lead from these traumatic events to poverty.
Yes, I mean the key, of course, is to get these when they're starting, when they occur, and that's one of the things we address in our recommendations. And also even after the fact, once we present ourselves as adult to the system to ask for help, among our recommendations is that the professionals be aware that we could be coming from these backgrounds, and so to be sensitive to that.
What were the reactions of the contributors when presented with their stories, which obviously contain so much pain?
Yes, but also strength. And that was a surprise, too. I mean, we were surprised so many times, and that was delightful. In the third or fourth session, after I had condensed their transcript, all their own words, to 2,500 words, I would read their story to them. And I would watch their body language because I wanted to be careful that they were all right. And there would be tears much of the time. But also I would see a dawning realization that this was powerful. And I really think they began to feel their own strength that they had thought was gone. And it was still there. And you can pick up the strength of these women in the stories. As sad and as hard as these stories are to take, just the fact that they've lived them shows their strength. And that we keep fighting.
Why did you decide to take it from the project stage and publish it as a book?
I never put it in words, but I tacitly promised the storytellers that something would come out of this, and I felt that as a personal promise. And it was extremely important to me that the book come out and that their stories be out there for people to read. I mean, as far as I could take it would be that the book would be out there. I have no control over whether people will read it, but at least I would have done my bit. And it's important for people to realize also that the book was an outcome, unexpected outcome of the project. It was not funded by project funds.
What kind of barriers are you facing then in carrying out the original project and getting the book to print?
Well, the original project, in a sense, is over. I mean, there's 5 months now left under our remaining Vancouver Foundation grant, which we'd also picked up, and that expires June 30th. But the book, as I said, is separate from that, and so, frankly, I'm having to fund it. And to put it boldly, Status of Women gave us $1,000 to go towards the cost of the book, but I came out with the rest from the last of my savings, and I only make the point, certainly not to gain sympathy for myself, but to make the point of how important this book is to us. I would prefer to be homeless and know that the book is out there than otherwise.
Why is that? What do you want to come out of the book?
Part of it is because of that promise that I made, and part of it is I just think it is so important to get the book out.
What would you like people to learn from the book? Why is it important to get it out there?
I think If readers buy our book and read it, then they will begin to get an understanding of what poverty looks like in Canada and how it's possible. And awareness and understanding is one of our major recommendations in the book. So that's what we're hoping, to get that started.
And out of this project, I think when you describe the process of the book, you started off in isolation. Has that changed as a result of working on the book?
Somewhat. I mean, we're a very tight-knit group. But the financial barriers continue to isolate. And so networking, for instance, in trying to get the word out is incredibly difficult. I don't know if I should say this, but big media have been a huge block. They don't want to hear, and our news releases, with the exception of one, has been totally ignored. And that's been distressing, because we talk about not being heard, and we're not getting responses. So we're so grateful for this interview.
Crystal, how can people get the book then?
It's available online on our website. That's www.wise-bc.org. And it's also available locally at one bookstore, Gattle Glass Books. They have agreed to sell it free. They're not charging a commission.
And that's over in Duncan?
That's in Duncan, yeah.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your talking with me today, and I really, really wish you good luck with the project. And we'll point people again. We'll give out the website again so people can get a hold of it and read it.
Thank you, and thank you to your audience for listening.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Crystal Ocean. She's the editor and publisher of the book Policies of Exclusion, Poverty, and Health: Stories from the Front. And you can buy or order the book at the website of her group, Wellness Through Inclusion, Socially and Economically, at the website www.wise-bc.org.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.